did you not know who your own father is?
He told me he was Michael Wayland. We lived in the Wayland country house.
A nice touch, said Maris.
That,
and your name. What's your real name?
You know my real name.
Jonathan Christopher.
I knew that was Valentine's son's name.
I knew Michael had a son named Jonathan, too. It's a common enough shadow hunter name. I never thought it was strange they shared it. And as for Michael's boy's middle name, I never inquired. But now I can't help wondering, what was Michael Wayland's son's real middle name? How long had Valentine been planning what he was going to do? How long did he know he was going to murder Jonathan Wayland?
She broke off, her eyes fixed on Jace.
You never looked like Michael, you know, she said. But sometimes children don't look like their parents. I didn't think about it before. But now I can see Valentine in you. The way you're looking at me. That defiance. You don't care what I say, do you?
But he did care. All he was good at was making sure she couldn't see it.
Would it make a difference if I did?
She set the glass down on the table beside her. It was empty.
And you answer questions with questions to throw me off, just like Valentine always did.
Maybe I should have known.
Maybe nothing. I'm still exactly the same person I've been for the past 7 years. Nothing's changed about me. If I didn't remind you of Valentine before, I don't see why I would now.
Her glance moved over him in a way as if she couldn't bear to look directly at him.
Surely when we talked about Michael, you must have known we couldn't possibly have met your father. The things we said about him could never have applied to Valentine.
You said he was a good man.
Anger twisted inside him.
A brave shadow hunter. A loving father.
I thought that seemed accurate enough.
What about photographs? You must have seen photographs of Michael Wayland and realized he wasn't the man you called your father.
She bit her lip.
Help me out here, Jace.
All the photographs were destroyed in the uprising. That's what you told me. Now I wonder if it wasn't because Valentine had them all burned so nobody would know who was in the circle.
I never had a photograph of my father, Jace said, and wondered if he sounded as bitter as he felt.
Maris put a hand to her temple and massaged it as if her head were aching.
I can't believe this, she said, as if to herself. It's insane.
So don't believe it. Believe me, Jace said, and felt the tremor in his hands increase.
She dropped her hand.
Don't you think I want to? She demanded.
And for a moment he heard the echo in her voice of the Maris who'd come into his bedroom at night when he was 10 years old and staring dry-eyed at the ceiling, thinking of his father, and she'd sat by the bed with him until he'd fallen asleep just before dawn.
I didn't know, Jay said again. And when he asked me to come with him back to Idris, I said no, I'm still here. Doesn't that count for anything?
She turned to look back at the decanter, as if considering another drink, then seemed to discard the idea.
I wish it did, she said. But there are so many reasons your father might want you to remain at the Institute.
Where Valentine is concerned, I can't afford to trust anyone his influence has touched.
His influence touched you, Jace said,
and instantly regretted it at the look that flashed across her face.
And I repudiated him, said Maris. Have you? Could you?
Her blue eyes were the same color as Alec's, but Alec had never looked at him like this.
Tell me you hate him, Jace. Tell me you hate that man and everything he stands for.
A moment passed, and another, and Jace, looking down, saw that his hands were so tightly fisted that the knuckles stood out white and hard like the bones in a fish's spine.
I can't say that.
Maris sucked in her breath.
Why not? Why can't you say that you trust me? I've lived with you almost half my life. Surely you must know me better than that.
You sound so honest, Jonathan. You always have. Even when you were a little boy trying to pin the blame for something you'd done wrong on Isabel or Alec. I've only ever met one person who could sound as persuasive as you.
Jace tasted copper in his mouth.
You mean my father.
There were only ever two kinds of people in the world for Valentine, she said. Those who were for the circle, and those who were against it. The latter were enemies,
and the former were weapons in his arsenal. I saw him try to turn each of his friends, even his own wife, into a weapon for the cause. And you want me to believe he wouldn't have done the same with his own son? She shook her head. I knew him better than that. For the first time, Maris looked at him with more sadness than anger. You are an arrow shot directly into the heart of the Clave, Jace. You are Valentine's arrow, whether you know it or not. Clary shut the bedroom door on the blaring TV and went to look for Simon. She found him in the kitchen, bent over the sink with the water running. His hands were braced on the draining board. Simon? The kitchen was a bright, cheerful yellow. The walls decorated with framed chalk and pencil sketches Simon and Rebecca had done in grade school. Rebecca had some drawing talent, you could tell, but Simon's sketches of people all looked like parking meters with tufts of hair. He didn't look up now, though she could tell by the tightening of his shoulder muscles that he'd hurt her. She went over to the sink, laying a hand lightly on his back. She felt the sharp nubs of his spine through the thin cotton t-shirt and wondered if he'd lost weight. She couldn't tell by looking at him, but looking at Simon was like looking in a mirror. When you saw someone every day, you didn't always notice small changes in their outward appearance. Are you okay? He turned the water off with a hard jerk of his wrist. Sure, I'm fine. She laid a finger against the side of his chin and turned his face toward her. He was sweating, the dark hair that lay across his forehead stuck to his skin, though the air coming through the half-open kitchen window was cool. You don't look fine. Was it the movie? He didn't answer. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have laughed, it's just... You don't remember? His voice sounded hoarse. Clary trailed off. That night, looking back, seemed a long haze of running, of blood and sweat, of shadows glimpsed in doorways, of falling through space. She remembered the white faces of the vampires, like paper cutouts against the darkness, and remembered Jace holding her, shouting hoarsely into her ear. Not really. It's a blur. His gaze flicked past her and then back. Do I seem different to you? He asked. She raised her eyes to his. His were the color of black coffee. Not really black, but a rich brown with a touch of gray or hazel. Did he seem different? There might have been an extra touch of confidence in the way he held himself since the day he'd killed Abaddon, the greater demon. But there was also a wariness about him, as if he were waiting or watching for something. It was something she had noticed about Jace as well. Perhaps it was only the awareness of mortality. You're still Simon. He half closed his eyes as if in relief, and as his eyelashes lowered, she saw how angular his cheekbones looked. He had lost weight, she thought, and was about to say so when he leaned down and kissed her. She was so surprised at the feel of his mouth on hers that she went rigid all over, grabbing for the edge of the draining board to support herself. She did not, however, push him away, and clearly taking this as a sign of encouragement, Simon slid his hand behind her head and deepened the kiss, parting her lips with his. His mouth was soft, softer than Jace's had been, and the hand that cupped her neck was warm and gentle. He tasted like salt. She let her eyes fall shut and for a moment floated dizzily in the darkness and the heat, the feel of his fingers moving through her hair. When the harsh ring of the telephone cut through her daze, she jumped back as if he'd pushed her away, though he hadn't moved. They stared at each other for a moment, in wild confusion, like two people finding themselves suddenly transported to a strange landscape where nothing was familiar. Simon turned away first, reaching for the phone that hung on the wall beside the spice rack. Hello? He sounded normal, but his chest was rising and falling fast. He held the receiver out to Clary. It's for you. Clary took the phone. She could still feel the pounding of her heart in her throat, like the fluttering wings of an insect trapped under her skin. It's Luke calling from the hospital. Something's happened to my mother. She swallowed. Luke, is it you? No, it's Isabel. Isabel? Clary looked up and saw Simon watching her, leaning against the sink. The flush on his cheeks had faded, Why are you... I mean, what's up? There was a hitch in the other girl's voice, as if she'd been crying. Is Jace there? Clary actually held out the phone so she could stare at it before bringing the receiver back to her ear. Jace? No. Why would he be here? Isabel's answering breath echoed down the phone line like a gasp. The thing is, he's gone. Chapter 2, The Hunter's Moon. Maya had never trusted beautiful boys, which was why she hated Jace Whalen the first time she ever laid eyes on him. Her twin brother Daniel had been born with her mother's honey-colored skin and huge dark eyes, and he'd turned out to be the sort of person who lit the wings of butterflies on fire to watch them burn and die as they flew. He'd tormented her as well, in small and petty ways at first, pinching her where the bruises wouldn't show, switching the shampoo in her bottle for bleach. She'd gone to her parents, but they hadn't believed her. No one had. Looking at Daniel, they'd confused beauty with innocence and harmlessness. When he broke her arm in 9th grade, she ran away from home, but her parents brought her back. In 10th grade, Daniel was knocked down in the street by a hit-and-run driver and killed instantly. Standing next to her parents at the graveside, Maya had been ashamed by her own overwhelming sense of relief. God, she thought, would surely punish her for being glad that her brother was dead. The next year, he did. She met Jordan. Long dark hair, slim hips and worn jeans, indie boy rocker shirts and lashes like a girl's. She never thought he'd go for her. His type usually preferred skinny, pale girls in hipster glasses. But he seemed to like her rounded shape. He told her she was beautiful in between kisses. The first few months were like a dream, the last few months like a nightmare. He became possessive, controlling. When he was angry with her, he'd snarl and whip the back of his hand across her cheek, leaving a mark like too much blusher. When she tried to break up with him, he pushed her, knocked her down in her own front yard before she ran inside and slammed the door. Later, she let him see her kissing another boy, just to get the point across that it was over. She didn't even remember that boy's name anymore. What she did remember was walking home that night, the rain misting her hair in fine droplets, mud splattering up the legs of her jeans as she took a shortcut through the park near her house. She remembered the dark shape exploding out from behind the metal merry-go-round, the huge, wet wolf body knocking her into the mud, the savage pain as its jaws clamped down on her throat. She'd screamed and thrashed, tasting her own hot blood in her mouth, her brain screaming, "This is impossible, impossible." There weren't wolves in New Jersey, not in her ordinary suburban neighborhood, not in the 21st century. Her cries brought lights on in the nearby houses, one after another of the windows lighting up like struck matches. The wolf let her go, its jaws trailing ribbons of blood and torn flesh. 24 stitches later, she was back in her pink bedroom, her mother hovering anxiously. The emergency room doctor had said the bite looked like a large dog's, but Maya knew better. Before the wolf had turned to race away, she'd heard a hot, familiar whispered voice in her ear. "You're mine now. You'll always be mine." She never saw Jordan again. He and his parents packed up their apartment and moved, and none of his friends knew where he'd gone or would admit they did. She was only half surprised the next full moon when the pain started, tearing pains that ripped up and down her legs, forcing her to the ground, bending her spine the way a magician might bend a spoon. When her teeth burst out of her gums and rattled to the floor like spilled chiclets, she fainted, or thought she did. She woke up miles away from her house, naked and covered in blood, the scar on her arm pulsing like a heartbeat. That night, she hopped the train to Manhattan. It wasn't a hard decision. It was bad enough being biracial in her conservative suburban neighborhood. God knew what they'd do to a werewolf. It hadn't been that hard to find a pack to fall in with. There were several of them in Manhattan alone. She wound up with the downtown pack, the ones who slept in the old police station in Chinatown. Pack leaders were mutable. There'd been Keto first, then Veronique, then Gabrielle, and now Luke. She'd liked Gabrielle all right, but Luke was better. He had a trustworthy look and kind blue eyes and wasn't too handsome, so she didn't dislike him on the spot. She was comfortable enough here with the pack, sleeping in the old police station, playing cards and eating Chinese food on nights when the moon wasn't full, hunting through the park when it was, and the next day drinking off the hangover of the change at the Hunter's Moon, one of the city's better underground werewolf bars. There was ale by the yard, and nobody ever carded you to see if you were under 21. Being a lycanthrope made you grow up fast, and as long as you sprouted hair and fangs once a month, you were good to drink at the moon, no matter how old you were in mundane years. These days, she hardly thought of her family at all, but when the blonde boy in the long black coat stalked his way into the bar, Maya stiffened all over. He didn't look like Daniel. Not exactly. Daniel had had dark hair that curled close to the nape of his neck and honey skin, and this boy was all white and gold. But they had the same lean bodies, the same way of walking, like a panther on the lookout for prey, and the same total confidence in their own attraction. Her hand tightened convulsively around the stem of her glass, and she had to remind herself, "He's dead. Daniel's dead." A rush of murmurs swept through the bar on the heels of the boy's arrival, like the froth of a wave spreading out from the stern of a boat. The boy acted as if he didn't notice anything, hooking a bar stool toward himself with a booted foot and settling onto it with his elbows on the bar. Maya heard him order a shot of single malt in the quiet that followed the murmurs. He downed half the drink with a neat flip of his wrist. The liquor was the same dark gold color as his hair. When he lifted his hand to set the glass back down on the bar, Maya saw the thick, coiling black marks on his wrists and the backs of his hands. Bat, the guy sitting next to her, she'd dated him once, but they were friends now, muttered something under his breath that sounded like Nephilim. So that's it. The boy wasn't a werewolf at all. He was a shadow hunter, a member of the Arcane World Secret Police Force. They upheld the law, backed by the Covenant, and you couldn't become one of them. You had to be born into it. Blood made them what they were. There were a lot of rumors about them, most unflattering. They were haughty, proud, cruel. They looked down on and despised downworlders. There were few things a lycanthrope liked less than a shadow hunter, except maybe a vampire. People also said that the shadow hunters killed demons. Maya remembered when she'd first heard that demons existed and had been told about what they did. It had given her a headache. Vampires and werewolves were just people with a disease, that much she understood. But expecting her to believe in all that heaven and hell crap, demons and angels, and still nobody could tell her for sure if there was a god or not, or where you went after you died, it wasn't fair. She believed in demons now. She'd seen enough of what they did that she wasn't able to deny it, but she wished she didn't have to. "I take it," the boy said, leaning his elbows onto the bar, "that you don't serve silver bullet here. Too many bad associations?" His eyes gleamed, narrow and shining like the moon at a quarter full. The bartender, Freaky Pete, just looked at the boy and shook his head in disgust. If the boy hadn't been a shadow hunter, Maya guessed, Pete would have tossed him out of the moon, but instead he just walked to the other end of the bar and busied himself polishing glasses.
"Actually," said Bat, who was unable to stay out of anything, "we don't serve it because it's really crappy beer."
The boy turned his narrow, shining gaze on Bat and smiled delightedly. Most people didn't smile delightedly when Bat looked at them funny. Bat was 6.5 feet tall, with a thick scar that disfigured half his face where silver powder had burned his skin. Bat wasn't one of the overnighters, the pack who lived in the police station, sleeping in the old cells. He had his own apartment, even a job. He'd been a pretty good boyfriend, right up until he dumped Maya for a red-headed witch named Eve who lived in Yonkers and ran a palmistry shop out of a garage. "And what are you drinking?" the boy inquired, leaning so close to Bat that it was like an insult. "A little hair of the dog that bit? Well, everyone?"
"You really think you're pretty funny," By this point, the rest of the pack was leaning in to hear them, ready to back up Bat if he decided to knock this obnoxious brat into the middle of next week. Don't you? Bat, Maya said. She wondered if she were the only pack member in the bar who doubted Bat's ability to knock the boy into next week. It wasn't that she doubted Bat. It was something about the boy's eyes. Don't. Bat ignored her.
Don't you?
Who am I to deny the obvious?
The boy's eyes slid over Maya as if she were invisible and went back to Bat.
I don't suppose you'd like to tell me what happened to your face. It looks like...
And here he leaned forward and said something to Bat so quietly that Maya didn't hear it. The next thing she knew, Bat was swinging a blow at the boy that should have shattered his jaw, only the boy was no longer there. He was standing a good 5 feet away, laughing, as Bat's fist connected with his abandoned glass and sent it soaring across the bar to strike the opposite wall in a shower of shattering glass. Freaky Pete was around the side of the bar, his big fist knotted in Bat's shirt, before Maya could blink an eye.
That's enough, he said. Bat, why don't you take a walk and cool down?
Bat twisted in Pete's grasp.
Take a walk? Did you hear?
I heard.
Pete's voice was low.
He's a shadow hunter. Walk it off, cub.
Bat swore and pulled away from the bartender. He stalked toward the exit, his shoulders stiff with rage. The door banged shut behind him. The boy had stopped smiling and was looking at Freaky Pete with a sort of dark resentment, as if the bartender had taken away a toy he'd intended to play with.
That wasn't necessary, he said. I can handle myself.
Pete regarded the shadow hunter.
It's my bar I'm worried about, he said finally. You might want to take your business elsewhere, shadow hunter, if you don't want any trouble.
I didn't say I didn't want trouble.
The boy sat back down on his stool.
Besides, I didn't get to finish my drink.
Maya glanced behind her, where the wall of the bar was soaked with alcohol.
Looks like you finished it to me.
For a second, the boy just looked blank. Then a curious spark of amusement lit in his golden eyes. He looked so much like Daniel in that moment that Maya wanted to back away. Pete slid another glass of amber liquid across the bar before the boy could reply to her.
Here you go, he said.
His eyes drifted to Maya. She thought she saw some admonishment in them. Pete, she began. She didn't get to finish. The door to the bar flew open. Bat was standing there in the doorway. It took a moment for Maya to realize that the front of his shirt and his sleeves were soaked with blood. She slid off her stool and ran to him.
Bat, are you hurt?
His face was gray, his silvery scar standing out on his cheek like a piece of twisted wire.
An attack, he said. There's a body in the alley, a dead kid, blood everywhere.
He shook his head, looked down at himself.
Not my blood, I'm fine.
A body? But who?
Bat's reply was swallowed in the commotion. Seats were abandoned as the pack rushed to the door. Pete came out from behind his counter and pushed his way through the mob. Only the shadow hunter boy stayed where he was, his head bent over his drink. Through gaps in the crowd around the door, Maya caught a glimpse of the gray paving of the alley, splashed with blood. It was still wet and had run between the cracks in the paving like the tendrils of a red plant.
His throat cut?
Pete was saying to Bat, whose color had come back.
How? There was someone in the alley, someone kneeling over him, Bat said.
His voice was tight.
Not like a person, like a shadow. They ran off when they saw me. He was still alive, a little. I bent down over him, but...
Bat shrugged. It was a casual movement, but the cords in his neck were standing out like thick roots wrapping a tree trunk.
He died without saying anything.
Vampires, said a buxom female lycanthrope.
Her name was Amabel, Maya thought, who was standing by the door.
The night children. It can't have been anything else.
Bat looked at her, then turned and stalked across the room toward the bar. He grabbed the shadow hunter by the back of the jacket, or reached out as if he meant to, but the boy was already on his feet, turning fluidly.
What's your problem, werewolf?
Bat's hand was still outstretched.
Are you deaf, Nephilim? He snarled. There's a dead boy in the alley, one of ours.
Do you mean a lycanthrope, or some other sort of downworlder?
The boy arched his light eyebrows.
You all blend together to me.
There was a low growl from Freaky Pete, Maya noted with some surprise. He had come back into the bar and was surrounded by the rest of the pack, their eyes fixed on the shadow hunter.
He was only a cub, said Pete. His name was Joseph.
The name didn't ring any bells for Maya, but she saw the tight set of Pete's jaw and felt a flutter in her stomach. The pack was on the warpath now, and if the shadow hunter had any sense, he'd be backpedaling like crazy. He wasn't, though. He was just standing there looking at them with those gold eyes and that funny smile on his face.
A lycanthrope boy, he said.
He was one of the pack, said Pete. He was only 15.
And what exactly do you expect me to do about it? Said the boy.
Pete was staring incredulously.
You're Nephilim, he said. The Clave owes us protection in these circumstances.
The boy looked around the bar, slowly, and with such a look of insolence that a flush spread over Pete's face.
I don't see anything you need protecting from here, said the boy, except some bad decor and a possible mold problem. But you can usually clear that up with bleach.
There's a dead body outside this bar's front door, said Bat, enunciating carefully. Don't you think?
I think it's a little too late for him to need protection, said the boy, if he's already dead.
Pete was still staring. His ears had grown pointed, and when he spoke, his voice was muffled by his thickening canine teeth.
You want to be careful, Nephilim, he said. You want to be very careful.
The boy looked at him with opaque eyes.
Do I?
So you're going to do nothing?
Bat said.
Is that it?
I'm going to finish my drink, said the boy,
eyeing his half-empty glass still on the counter.
If you'll let me. So that's the attitude of the Clave, a week after the Accords, said Pete with disgust. The death of Downworlders is nothing to you?
The boy smiled, and Maya's spine prickled. He looked exactly like Daniel, just before Daniel reached out and yanked the wings off a ladybug.
How like Downworlders, he said. Expecting the Clave to clean your mess up for you. As if we could be bothered, just because some stupid cub decided to splatter paint himself all over your alley.
And he used a word for wares that they never used themselves. A filthily unpleasant word that implied an improper relationship between wolves and human women. Before anyone else could move, Bat flung himself at the shadow hunter, but the boy was gone. Bat stumbled and whirled around, staring. The pack gasped. Maya's mouth dropped open. The shadow hunter boy was standing on the bar, feet planted wide apart. He really did look like an avenging angel getting ready to dispatch divine justice from on high, as the shadow hunters were meant to do. Then he reached out a hand and curled his fingers toward himself quickly. A gesture familiar to her from the playground is, come and get me, and the pack rushed at him. Bat and Amabel swarmed up onto the bar. The boy spun so quickly that his reflection in the mirror behind the bar seemed to blur. Maya saw him kick out, and then the two were groaning on the floor in a flurry of smashed glass. She could hear the boy laughing, even as someone else reached up and pulled him down. He sank into the crowd with an ease that spoke of willingness. And then she couldn't see him at all, just a welter of flailing arms and legs. Still, she thought she could hear him laughing, even as metal flashed, the edge of a knife, and she heard herself suck in her breath.
That's enough.
It was Luke's voice, quiet, steady as a heartbeat. It was strange how you always knew your pack leader's voice. Maya turned and saw him standing just at the entrance to the bar, one hand against the wall. He looked not just tired, but ravaged, as if something were tearing him down from the inside. Still, his voice was calm as he said again,
That's enough. Leave the boy alone.
The pack melted away from the shadow hunter, leaving just Bat still standing there defiant, one hand still gripping the back of the shadow hunter's shirt, the other holding a short-bladed knife. The boy himself was bloody-faced, but hardly looked like someone who needed saving. He was grinning a grin as dangerous-looking as the broken glass that littered the floor.
He's not a boy, Bat said. He's a shadow hunter.
They're welcome enough here, said Luke, his tone neutral. They are our allies.
He said it didn't matter, said Bat angrily. About Joseph.
I know,
Luke said quietly.